Welcome to another episode of The King's Couch. I'm your host, Sulo King. And today on this special Zoom edition, The King's Couch, I have the amazing and talented Mayor Applebaum. He's a mastering engineer based out of LA. How are you?
I'm doing good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Were you busy working, starting off the new year? How's that been going?
Yeah, I actually, when my kids went to winter break, I was actually working. So I didn't get a chance to take a vacation, right. But I'm not complaining. I worked every day, but I also had some time to watch with my son Star Wars. So we got to see all the 9 movies plus the 2 movies that were later on.
Oh, wow. You know,
additional stories.
Yeah, a movie marathon. Look at you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Right on. How old's your kid?
He's 10.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So like every guest I have on the show, I like to go back to the beginning and see how, you know, everything started in your career, what your earliest influences are, and what inspired you to do what you do today. So why don't we talk about where you were born and raised, where you grew up, and just kind of gradually go from there.
I was born and raised in Israel. And that's where I, you know, lived most of my life. And I've been traveling around a bit, but that was, you know, short times. But I moved to the States when I was in my 30s. And I went to work for producer Sylvia Massey. So I worked for her for a while. And then I moved to Los Angeles and I opened my mastering facility. And that's what I've doing since then. When I lived in Israel, I was also in broadcasting, and I was also DJing. I was also doing some, you know, working with my own bands. I had my own bands back then that I was performing with and recording with, and I had different projects that I was involved with. But basically, you know, that's where I started with music and you know, playing in the bands and making the music, you know, from high school and up, you know, just like a lot of people, you know, and my interest grew in recording as I was growing up. And I made a living, you know, from working in audio, but in different aspects of audio. And then I decided to move to the States because I wanted to progress in my field of mastering, and I wanted to be in closer proximity to where that type of industry is big.
And what year was that in?
End of 2007.
Okay.
Not in, sorry, half of, like summer. Summer 2007.
Okay. You lived somewhere else before you moved to LA, or?
Yeah, I lived in a place called Weed.
Oh, yeah. That's all the way on the border of California, right before Oregon.
Yes. That's way where Sylvia, that's where Sylvia Massey had the studio there called Radio Star Studios. So I lived in the studio.
Oh, wow. How long did you do that for?
8 months every day. Including the weekends, was all the time, like living and working in the studio.
Then you eventually found your way down to LA, and you've been there ever since.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. What influenced you to become a mastering engineer?
That's a good question. I think I just gravitated to it because having the experience of being a DJ, and I also had some radio shows. I had like internet radio shows when it really started out. And I had, I was a music journalist in 2 magazines, well, webzine and a magazine. And before that, I was in another magazine. So I had the experience of being a listener, you know, as like a reviewer or a DJ that's presenting the music. And I had the experience of being a band member because I had bands and projects I was involved in. So I also had that aspect, and I had the technical aspect because I learned sound engineering.
Right.
So I felt like it gave me different perspectives. And in mastering, that's the perspective you want. You want to be, you know, the last in the chain. You want to be the closest to the listener in terms of the presentation of the music. So I think it just gravitated to it. And when I discovered mastering, because I went to have my record mastered, it was interesting for me. Mm. And I think that's what gravitated me towards it, is that it's the finishing touch, it's the final step. It's good to have the perspective of the audience, kind of, or the reviewer, like a journalist or a DJ, like someone who's presenting it, or the radio DJ. Because when you do all that kind of stuff, you kind of have a perspective, an outside perspective looking in.
Right.
I think that's what brought me to the profession.
Yeah, it's an interesting profession. You know, it's not something that you come across typically with a lot of audio engineers. It's a very specified role. But that's interesting how that influenced you to want to become a master in engineering. You've been doing it ever since. Besides being a DJ, what instruments do you play?
I played bass. Okay. And I did some synthesizers, but I was not like a keyboard player per se. I just, made sounds and stuff like that with the bands I was in. But the instrument I was more into was the bass guitar.
Oh, okay. Do you still pick up the bass?
I don't play anymore.
Okay.
I have one here, but I'll just do dum 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 and call it a day.
Well, at least you pick it up. Some people just, let their basses or their instruments collect dust after they're done.
It does collect dust because I only pick it up once in a while. I do miss it, but at the same time, I'm so into what I'm doing that, I can understand when somebody was doing music for a long time and now he works on other people's music and he doesn't have time to do his own music or practice.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, well, that's great that you're so passion-driven when it comes to your career. So let's talk a little bit about your career, like your early upbringings of branding your name and getting yourself out there and, struggle of just really creating your name in a very widespread industry.
Well, when I came here, you start from nothing, right? So you have to find something. So I would go out to shows on Sunset Strip, go to the clubs and give out cards and try to talk to the bands, tell them what I do and hopefully they'll come. You can do that for so long and it just doesn't do much work, but you try. You can give out 100,000 cards and you get 10 calls, but you try. So it's a big hustle. It's a big investment time-wise. Of course, money when you invest in your studio, of course, and the tools. And so, yeah, that's what I did for a long time. And in time, I met people who gave me the chance, who believed in me, who wanted to try me out, and some of those projects that came in came out amazing or great or good or whatever you want, or okay, or, whatever you want to scale them. And either brought me more work in or created a rapport between me and the other person that brought it in. So there was a connection. Some of those brought more work. Some of those just did that job and that's it. Some of them didn't do anything. So it's a constant uphill battle in a way, because it in a way it gets easier, but in the other way it doesn't get easier, because then your competition is different, and as you grow you're competing with a different market where you're competing with different people and scales that are better. So as it gets easier, it gets harder in a different way.
That's an interesting perspective on that. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So as you progress, your competition is usually more qualified people. Mm. So in the beginning, you're competing in a smaller, like in a bigger pond with people who are not in their top game. So if you put a lot of time and effort and you expand and become better in what you're doing, then your competition there changes, because then you're rising higher. But then when your skill set goes much higher, but your pay rate goes higher too, then you're competing with another tier of people who are more qualified, have better skills, more connections, better discographies, credits, whatever you want to call it. And now you're competing with people who are either above your level, on your level, or slightly under, but they all can grab a piece of the cake. Mm-hmm. So you progress with that. Hopefully you stay afloat, and hopefully after that you can shine. Then you grow to the next tier. There you have people who are doing it for a longer time, who are much better. And then, you know, the more you grow, you're competing with a scale of people who probably have done it way more than you. So you want to up your game all the time. You know, if it's your skills, if it's your connections, if it's understanding better things, making better decisions, of course, investing in your gear. There's always going up. And you could be in a spot where you're good with everything, but maybe just more connections, or it could be a spot where you're happy where you are and you don't want more. You just wanted to keep it like that. Mm-hmm. But everyone's different. And there's always another record coming out. There's always something new and interesting, and it's challenging, and it's rewarding. Not as money wise always, but a lot of times it's rewarding knowing that you've done something that people like, and that helps them sound better to the audience, and people are connecting to those records.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. And, you know, throughout their years working on your way up the tiers in the industry, now you've created a name for yourself and you've worked on some very like notable artists' records. Why don't we talk a little bit about some of those experiences?
Every project has the potential to bring a different project in, and sometimes you'll work on a project that maybe has like a legacy artist, but it's not a big artist nowadays, but that can create a relationship with the producer or mixer that you work with, and then he might be working on a bigger project and he'll be like, oh, I had a good experience with this guy on this, maybe we can do it again, and then it brings you another one. So even small projects can lead to bigger projects. When you do a big project, it can bring you a big project as well, but it can also bring you a lot of small projects. So that's the good thing about when you're working on a bigger records, that it can bring another set of records to you from big and small. And it's easier to, you know, to kind of promote yourself when you do a bigger record, of course. Big records don't have to be huge records, but they could be big enough in their niche. And it's enough that they have a huge following in their niche to bring you a lot of clientele. I'll give you an example. I worked with Faith No More, and they're quite a known band in their niche, especially because they were very influential to a lot of artists. And I did their comeback album that came out in 2015. It's called Soul Invictus. And that record did well, and people were digging into it. And it got me a lot of awareness to me. After that record, I remastered their first record, We Care a Lot, and it came out with bonus tracks, additional tracks, and like it's remastered. It's called We Care a Lot, the Deluxe Band Edition.
Nice.
And another band that I worked with that got me, you know, kind of a name is Yes. And I've done 6 albums with them.
Oh, wow.
It was 1 studio album and 5 live albums. I've done records for Meatloaf, for Starset, for El Nino, for Sepultura, for Rob Halford, Ingram Elmstein, Armored Saint, Cynic. I'm trying to remember all the stuff I've done. I've done a lot of records, so I have to remember. Dokken, Fate's Warning, Voivod, The Gathering, Necromantics, Horror Pops, Butcher Babies, Green Carnation, Gilby Clark.
Gilby Clark, he was Guns N' Roses, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm trying to remember.
Well, you don't have to list them all.
Eric Gales. Yeah. I did 3 albums for Eric Gales, 2 albums for Walter Trout, an album for William Shatner, Sacred Reich. I did a comeback album. Yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah, well, sounds like you've had quite the career. That's awesome. And I'm sure now that your name is circulated throughout the industry, you know, the hustle isn't as hard, but I'm sure you still put the effort and legwork out there in promoting yourself. And then these days versus the old days in the 2000s, you know, we didn't have all this social media at our disposal to sit there and, you know, market ourselves. You know, before it was more, like you said, like being like a scout going out there and going out to the shows and hitting the scene and handing out business cards and having all kinds of, you know, face-to-face conversations. And, you know, that kind of marketing is still very effective today. I know that from having my own studio and having to do that too. And I share a lot of the, you know, same similarities and, you know, being the new kid on the block and trying to figure out how to, you know, create my own niche and stand out from everybody else with what they're doing and whatnot. And, you know, I had a successful 7-year run doing that. It was a lot of fun. And that's actually how I was first introduced to you, was through my business partner, Frank. And I believe you guys probably met at NAMM some years ago. I think that's originally how you guys met. And throughout the years, we would always recommend our clientele to you. And I actually got the chance to finally work with you for the first time with my own project earlier this year, which was a lot of fun. And everybody was really ecstatic about how big you made that song sound, because this wasn't just like a normal release. This was a song we wrote as a theme song for a professional soccer team here in San Diego called SD Loyal. So we wanted that big, like anthem-y type sound to it, you know, and Frank did the recording. He nailed that. And then, you know, of course, before he even said anything, I was like, I'm hitting a Mayor and I'm going to have him master the song. You did an excellent job on that. So, you know, I can definitely personally recommend anyone that has a record or a song that they need mastered to, you know, look this man up and get in contact with him. And on your profile, we'll have all your social media and website links on how to get a hold of you and whatnot.
Thank you. I'm happy you liked what I did.
Definitely.
It's always a pleasure working with you guys. So it was fun.
Well, the one thing I love about you, and I'm sure you've come across this a lot in the industry, and we'll talk a little bit about this, is when it comes to working with your clientele, you're very personable. Like, you feel like you can get more across through a phone call for what the client is looking for than an email or a text message or something about that. And that's one thing that gravitated me towards you and wanting to work with you more in the future, especially because of that. I've always had that kind of approach too. I feel like, you know, you can get a lot more accomplished by having a phone call and understanding what the client's needs are. Would you share the same sentiment in that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's different ways to approach a project. Sometimes a project is just sent to me and I don't have any connection with them, so I'll do it as it is. But if there's a way to communicate, just to kind of be in sync with each other, texts are cool, but texts are limited because you never know when the person is reading it. And also in written form, sometimes it's harder to elaborate on certain things, and the communication is better when you ask and get an immediate response and then ask again. And so I'm open to either way, you know, email, text, or phone. And a lot of times, you know, if there's a problem, it's easier to fix it by communicating by phone than by text or email. And even if there's no problem, just inquiring about certain things for the song, you know, if there's anything specific you like or don't like, it's good to know. So to me, communications is key, and I want people to put the cards on the table. And, you know, this service is personable, is custom. I do it based on the music. I do it based on the sound. I do it based on the vision of what it looks like it's supposed to be or what I'm hearing from it. So it's also natural that in some cases, a phone conversation will elevate the project better if needed. Mm. You know, I'm not against emails. I'm just saying that you have three ways of communications, or four if you chat too. Utilizing them is not a bad idea. Some stuff I will ask for an email, like specific timings or stuff like that. It's better that I have them written in email because I can look at the number. Mm. But if it's a more of a abstract thing where we have to talk about it and understand, or I have immediate questions that I need fast answers for them, or, you know, just a conversation to figure out what's needed, phone calls are best, you know. So
yeah, I agree.
But it is personable always in a way, you know.
That's great. And for our viewers out there that might be wondering, are you pretty versatile as an engineer? I mean, can you pretty much take on any kind of audio project? Is there a certain genre that you feel like you are stronger in than others?
I only do mastering, but in terms of mastering, I've covered anything from classical music to jazz to rock to blues, funk, metal, hip-hop, pop, R&B, soul, singer-songwriter, acoustic, cinematic music, video game music, all types of metal, you know, from heavy metal to death metal to grindcore to hardcore to thrash to, you know, whatever you want in that field. Electronic music, you know, from anything from abstract or electronica or you know, synth pop to EDM, you know, techno, trance, house, progressive, all that, you know.
Right.
I've touched so many genres, you know, Latin rock, folk español, you know, new age music, folk, traditional, and world music. I mean, I've touched so many styles. I'm very versatile with that. And also sonically, I have so much gear that I can utilize it for different projects. And so it doesn't have to stay one sound, you know?
Okay. Let's talk a bit about your gear. I know everyone has their own personalized touch, and the gear kind of defines the engineer, you know, as well as their style goes. You know, when it comes to recording and mixing engineers, mastering is a whole other ball game, a whole other animal. So why don't we talk about like do you have like a signature sound or, you know, go-to gear or, you know, what do you like to use?
Well, mind? Because I have so much different types of gear, then there's no signature one sound. Every project gets what it needs to get. So I have a lot of analog, tube, solid state, custom built gear, for like gear that was built with me for me, and gear that was custom modified for me, and then also high tier gear. There's not one thing, you know. I have everything from like custom gear, like the oven, which I'm involved with, or the stove, which I'm involved with, and there are going to be others too. I have a lot of very unique pieces, like the Magic Death Eye compressor, the Electronaut M97 compressors, my own personal stuff, like the Workshop LTD with FCS, the Bench with FCS, and the Torch with FCS. FCS is a custom-built company. I have stuff from Overstayer. I have that was custom modified. I have Lavery Savatier gold converters, JCF Latte converters, JCF 88 Crane Song head, Rupert Neve Designs MBC. I have a lot of very good stuff. So there's no signature sound. It's more of a lot of types of sounds, and certain things will require more coloration and vibe. Certain things will require a tad of that. Some stuff will need more transparency in a way. Some things will need in between kind of transparency, but a touch. There's no one sound that's, always there. There might be characters that people can recognize if they take 30 records that I've done and try to analyze, they might find something similar in a way, but it's not one sound. It's more of understanding the vibe of the music and going with that. Plus, some of the sound is you bring what you feel is working for the record, and also hearing from the client if they're liking it.
Yeah, definitely communicating with the client is always key. See what they're looking for. That's awesome. Let's talk about some of the collaborations you've done with all these different companies.
So with the Foot Control Systems, or FCS, I've done with them 3 customs. Roger Foot is an amazing guy, awesome person to communicate with, and has great ideas, and he takes the input and creates something from it. And we made 3 pieces of gear. One is called the Workshop LTD MA, which is kind of a saturator clipper with a gear drive and other functions. Then we have the Bench, which is kind of like that in a different sound. And then the Torch, which gives me different sounds of different analog circuitry. So those are more, to run through and get kind of a vibe from them. Those were custom units that were built only for me. My other customs that I'm involved with that are coming out and already came out for people to actually buy is the Oven. We did that. It's a collaboration between Handy Amps. It's HENDYAMPS, Handy Amps, and me. So we collaborated on a unit called the Oven and another unit called the Stove. And then we're going to have 2 more units this year, the Toaster and the Steamer. The Oven and the Stove are kind of mix bus processors that you can use for mixing, for mastering, for passing sounds through them and improving them, like drums, like vocals, different stems. The Toaster is a mono-channel preamp, and the Steamer is a passive unit also to run sounds through. Then I have other gear that was custom modified for me, like small tweaks here and there. Some of them are bigger tweaks. Those are in collaboration with me in terms of the things I want, but they're not products that I'm involved in selling, like in the releasing of them.
Right. Only the candy amps are available to the general public.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting name, choice of names too. They're all kitchen appliances.
Handy Amps is a company that has their own line of products that they build to order, and they do some custom stuff for people. But the oven, the stove, the toaster, and the steamer, those are the only collaborations that come out of us together that are coming out.
That's really cool. And then you have some plugins as well.
Well, the plugins, most of the stuff with the plugins is actually presets that I write. Mm-hmm. For companies, for example, I write for Waves, for Leapwing Audio, Pulsar Audio, Softube, Arturia. So it's different. IK Multimedia as well, and Brainworks Plugin Alliance. So they'll release a plugin, and then I'll write some presets for them, and they will have them for people. They're like kind of presets that are good for starting points that either can work as they are or you can tweak them a bit.
Okay.
And then this year, there's supposed to be a plugin version of the oven coming out through Brainworks and Plugin Alliance.
Cool. That's awesome. And then how did you get involved with all these different companies? It was more like you were looking for certain, you know, customizations to your gear, and then the collaborations started just kind of, you know, taking effect from there.
Yeah, basically I wanted to have gear that fits some tonal aspect that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of gear before that, and every once in a while I'll buy more stuff and I figure out this is what I like, this is what I less like. So you start understanding where your taste comes into place in terms of what you like and what do you like to apply. And then I connected with the companies, the builders, and said, this is what I'm looking for. This is something we can work on together. And you build it step by step. And it takes a while to design and develop something with someone, because there's prototyping, there's testing. Sometimes you do it and it doesn't sound as good as you hope for, and you need to change it. You know, like you hope for a certain sound and then it sounds different. So then you're talking with them on the phone and saying, okay, what do I hear here? What do I hear there? Try this, try that. Then we try different things, you know, and, or there's a function that in theory was working right, but in actual results, you need it to be differently than what expected. So that's why things take time, and also some things sound great, but then you find a way to improve it, or some things sound great and you're like, you know what, let's leave it like that, let's approach a different thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always a process. It can take a long time, and you have to run different prototypes to try different ideas, and you know, you can sometimes go through a few prototypes till you get the right thing. And then also in time, you learn what works with what. Some stuff doesn't work the way you expected, and then you have to work it differently. So all these projects, they took a while, you know, took some years to do the oven, took some years to do the other stuff. So it's been a few years at least,
right,
on each one of them.
Well, that's cool. You know, not every engineer says they have their own signature line. So that's really cool, man. That's something to definitely be proud of for sure.
It's been, but it's fun. You know, it's challenging. It's, you have to think a lot. You have to visualize it. Yep. There's a lot of things involved to getting it the way you want it. And I'm happy I did it, because now I have these tools.
Yeah. At your disposal. That's awesome. Now, do you work from home or do you have a facility?
Well, my facility, you know, I mean, COVID now is, you know, limits you to stuff, right? But my facility is an actual studio that I have here, you know, my place, and it's packed with gear and you know, room, like big speakers, you know, gear, everything.
Right. Have you had the same place for a long time, or you kind of
bounced? I had around? A place before this one. I had a place for almost a decade.
Okay.
And this is a new place now.
Oh, okay. And do you feel like there's any difference between the facilities? Has it improved, or, you know, any kind of tonal difference?
There's always a difference because you're moving from one room to another. That room I was 10 years in, you know, there's always differences, you know, the room size, you know, the whole dimension thing. But you know, I moved to a new place anyway. So in the beginning, when we moved to a new place, I was still renting the older place because I was used to it. So I had some records I had to finish. So I stayed there for a few months. But the new place is working good. I've been doing a lot of records here.
That's great. Do you have some exciting projects in the works right now?
Most of the projects I do, I like, so they're exciting for me.
Right. You know,
most of them.
Right. I hear you. Sometimes a job's a job. You know.
But, well, you do your best. Yeah. You know, you want to make sure that the client is happy and you're delivering what works for them. You know, some records are more interesting. Some are okay. Some are great, you know. It's a mixed bag.
I hear you. So for any viewers out there that are watching this that may be interested in pursuing a career as a mastering engineer, what kind of advice would you give them?
The first thing is that, you know, listen to a lot of music, know the aesthetics of the different music styles, be aware of what is part of the tone that the bands have, kind of try to identify it. That helps a lot. And then the other thing is that it's good to have some business sense, like, you know, make sure you understand the exchange of what you're getting for your work. You know, if you're going too cheap, you're going to have work very hard to get money, and it's not always good to be really cheap. You know, like, find your value. Sometimes it's okay, you know, like if you're not sure of your value, it's okay to work for free for a while just to get the chops, you know, and improve. It's not bad to work for free in order to develop. And then when you feel confident with your chops, you know, see how much you need to charge so you're getting enough and you're competitive in your rates, so you can bring business in, and always try to improve your skills, your abilities with the gear, your client base. It's constant work. So be aware, be ready for that. If there's any places that you can get any good master classes and learn or be an apprentice for someone, that's always something that could be potentially good, you know, because if you're learning from someone who does it for a long time, you can pick up a lot of knowledge from that. Even if it's free, you know, you're basically studying. It's a roller coaster ride. So you have to be aware that there's going to be times where you're going to be uphill battle. And then sometimes it's going to be like, oh man, it's just tons of stuff to deal with. And then it's like fun, and then it's not. And some days you worry, sometimes you don't. It's a freelancer life when you don't work for a firm. And there's a lot of information out there if you want to read. You know, there's books, there's videos, master classes. I've done also a few master classes. There's really? One that I've done called Creative Mastering with Maor Applebaum. You can just Google it, Creative Mastering with Maor Applebaum. And meet other peers and talk with them. You know, people have different experiences with different stuff. So they can give you perspectives too.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, hopefully you guys that are tuning in that are interested in becoming a mastering engineer will find that information useful. Like you said, there's plenty of different avenues, and you just really got to, you know, start off from the beginning, work for a company, and you start putting yourself out there. You know, so it's a lot of work, like any kind of career that you want to get into.
You can go by yourself too. Yeah. You know, that's fine as well. And just work hard and get, and, you know, work hard and get far.
Yeah. Yeah. Freelance work sounds fun and enticing, but it's a lot of time and effort. You really got to market yourself, and you got to, you know, just hit the pavement running. You know, we both know that firsthand, and it takes a while, but once that word of mouth starts growing, that's, you know, your bread and butter right there. And that's how, you know, the whole audio industry has pretty much been, is through word of mouth. You start getting recommendations left and right once your work starts speaking for itself. And, you know, I got to give that to you, Mayari. Like, you definitely made quite the name for yourself. And it's been an absolute pleasure working with you on and off all these years, and now on a personal level. And I can't wait to hit the studio and have you master my next project.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah, definitely. Looking into 2022, do you have any aspirations, any goals, anything you'd like to personally achieve with your business this year?
As always, I want to grow. I want to improve. I want to have more clients. I want to have more records that I enjoy working on. And
I think I lost your video
feed. Yeah, just a second.
No problem.
There?
There we go. Yeah, now you're back.
Yeah. So I just want to, you know, I want to improve the visibility of my business outside, so people will be aware of. I want to have more records coming in that I like. Of course, if some are not to my liking, but they come in and they're good to work with, then I'll do so, of course. But the whole idea is, you know, you always want to improve and get more of what you want. So hopefully 2022 will bring me more of that too.
There you go.
You know, and as always, you know, we have three more products coming out this year, so I want them to be successful. And the first product, the oven, I want that to be successful as well. I want the plugin to be successful. I want other potential stuff that we've been working on designing to come out and, you know, to flourish. And I mean, there's always, you know, you always wish the most and the best for yourself.
Right. I hear you. Have you ever personally, like, given anyone one-on-one lessons on how to master?
Yes. I've done like consulting for people. Yeah.
Okay.
Either by Skype or WhatsApp or Zooms. Yeah. I've done like, it's more consulting.
Right. I think I lost your video feed again.
Yeah. You hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah. I didn't lose audio, just the video for a second. Okay. Interesting. Do you have any I know you mentioned master classes. Could those master classes be found online somewhere, like YouTube?
Yeah, there's a master class called Creative Mastering with Maor Applebaum.
Okay. All right. So
it's under Pro Audio Master Classes. That's the company.
Okay.
But it's enough that you write Creative Mastering with Maor Applebaum.
Definitely. So for those of you tuning in, if you are interested in learning the process of mastering through Mayor, definitely go look that up on YouTube and you can find it there. Awesome. Is there anything else that you'd like to discuss before we wrap this up today?
Well, just wishing everybody, you know, a happy new year, 2022. You know, the last years were a bit challenging, or not a bit, or actually challenging for some more and some less. But, you know, music goes on and life goes on, and we have to push. And even if there's a struggle, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. So I want you all to, you know, be strong, be patient, be persistent, keep on doing this. Even if it's not a paying gig, but you love doing this, do it because it's for your soul, for your heart, for your mind. And wishing everybody the best. You're welcome to check out my website, maorapelbaum.com, www.maorapelbaum.com. Facebook, I have a few of them. Just get in touch with me. I'll be happy to work with you guys. And good luck with all the music.
Yeah. And I'll have everything, all your links listed on your profile for this episode. So if anyone's interested and wanting to get in contact with Maor, they can definitely do that there. And this brings me to the part of the interview where I usually have the guest, give all the viewers a personal affirmation that they live by or some kind of, positive advice. But it sounds like you already kind of did that. It kind of beat me.
My best advice is negative and positive are both good. It's just how you look at it. You need to have negative feedback in order to improve. You need to have positive feedback in order to know. But you can't just have like one and live without the other. There's always something that you can improve. And be open to feedback if it's negative or positive. You might not agree with the negative, but it's better to hear it than not to hear it. Because sometimes there is something good in it to learn from. And then, criticism is not bad until it starts ruining for you, like scrutinizing too much. You need to know where things are. And if you can put the effort to fix something or improve, do it. If not, it's okay. Like there's certain elements. So everything is good. It's just a matter of how you look at it.
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%. My mentor in the industry taught me early on. He pointed at the stage and he's like, see that stage right there? He's like, if you want to get on that stage, you've got to be able to take it if you want to make it, or else don't even bother getting up there and trying to put in that effort, because you got to be able to understand and take any form of criticism, whether it's critical or constructive or whatever. Not everyone's going to like your music. Some people are going to praise what you do. But regardless of that, you can't let that interfere from that. And like you said, you gotta, be able to like learn from your mistakes and kind of grow and move on from that. And that's something that I've never forgotten. And I've always applied in everything that I do, when it comes to, me playing music or working in the music industry, or even what I do now, working as a health coach, I take a lot of those same life principles and apply them into, day-to-day life. So yeah, you got a very positive mindset about yourself, Maor, that I admire, and it's inspiring to hear your words of wisdom. And especially, it's exciting for me to interview you and be able to share this with the world for others, and hopefully they can find some inspiration in this. Well, who knows, maybe you can find a client or two out of this at the same time.
That'll be great.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And good luck with the podcasts.
Appreciate that. And that wraps up another episode of The King's Couch with my special guest, Maor Apelbaum. And once again, if you're interested in hiring him for his services, our links will be on this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And I look forward to talking to you soon, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And good luck with everything.
Likewise.
Thanks.
And have a nice day. And catch you guys next time.
Cheers.